Imagine for a second that the universe isn't actually made of atoms, like no protons, no electrons.
Right, no physical stuff at all.
Exactly. No empty space stretching out into this cold, dark void. Instead, I want you to picture the universe as this giant, programmable boundary. And it's made entirely of something called semantic truth states.
Which is just a wild concept to wrap your head around.
It really is. In this version of reality, physical distance doesn't actually exist. The space between, you and the device you're listening on right now, complete illusion.
Yeah, it's just a projection.
Right. So the reality we experience every day is actually a holographic dictionary, and we are just reading the code.
It's a massive paradigm shift, honestly. I mean, we are moving completely away from classical physics and, frankly, away from traditional computing
Oh,
altogether.
for sure.
Like, if you've ever felt like reality is just a simulation, well, the math in today's sources actually tries to prove how its underlying code is written.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because our mission for today's deep dive is to explore this mind-bending theoretical framework. It's called TelepathMM.
Yeah, telepathism.
And we have two incredibly fascinating source texts guiding us today. There's a document simply titled 2dprobability.txt and a foundational treatise called The Boundary Codex.
Both of which essentially attempt to rewrite the rules of existence. I mean, they argue that everything we know about space, time, and data is just a surface-level illusion.
Just hiding a deep, complex web of programmable truth.
Exactly. So to really grasp how the universe could act as this kind of computer, we first have to understand the specific code it uses.
Because it's not using what we're used to.
No, not at all. It doesn't run on binary ones and zeros. It doesn't even use classical probability, where an event just has a flat percentage of being true or false.
Right.
It uses something the framework calls a 2D mesh.
And this is where it gets really wild. Because in a normal computer, or even just in our normal human brains, we tend to think of truth as a simple toggle.
A binary state.
Yeah, yes or no, true or false. It's a point truth, like a coin flip. If I ask, is it raining, the answer is either yes or no.
Which the sources call a 1D probability, right? A
Okay.
scalar. It's just a single dot of information.
But the TelepathMM framework argues that 1D probability is, well, it's just far too simplistic to actually render a whole universe.
Oh, way too simplistic. It upgrades that single number to what they call a semantic tensor field.
A semantic tensor
Yeah.
field.
So you are no longer just asking if something is true. You are asking, how does this specific truth relate to that other truth under these specific conditions?
Oh, God.
You aren't dealing with a flat answer anymore. You're dealing with an entire matrix.
It's kind of like the difference between asking someone for a street address and then being handed a massive topographical map of an entire mountain range.
That is a perfect way to put it, actually.
Because with a 1D truth, you just have a pin on a map.
Huh.
But with a 2D mesh probability, you have a whole coordinate system.
Right, you've got your axes.
Yeah, you've got an x-axis, which the codex calls axis I, or the question space. And you've got a y-axis, axis j, which is the context space.
Let's take that topographical map analogy one step further because it perfectly illustrates the concept here. Truth in this framework is a literal topological landscape.
A landscape of data.
Exactly. The mesh represents a probability density surface. So instead of a binary yes or no result, you have high-value clusters in the mesh.
And those are called basins of attraction, right?
Yes. Think of them as actual geometric depressions in the map, like valleys of truth. And they're surrounded by towering peaks and steep slopes made of context and variables and nuance.
I really love that visual, but it immediately raises a huge logistical problem for me.
Oh, like what?
Well, if every single truth requires an entire coordinate plane of context, the processing power needed just to figure out something simple would be astronomical.
Oh, absolutely.
So how does a computer, or the universe for that matter, actually search this massive mountain range to find the answer without getting completely lost in all that data?
Well, that is where the framework introduces programmable instructions. And it starts with the GRAID, or gradient instruction.
Okay, the GRA instruction.
Yeah. In classical computing, finding an answer in a massive database often involves brute force searching or just random sampling.
Which takes forever.
Right. But in a semantic tensor field, the system doesn't guess. The GRAID instruction calculates the steepest path down the probability mesh using something called stochastic gradient descent.
Wait, hold on. Stochastic gradient descent. That sounds like a textbook fell down a flight of stairs.
I know, it's a mouthful.
Can you break that down for us? What does the stochastic part actually do?
Fair enough. So stochastic just means introducing a tiny, calculated amount of randomness.
Like a little bit of noise.
Exactly. Imagine dropping a marble onto your topographical map to find the deepest valley. If the map has a lot of little shallow dips, the marble might get stuck in a small ditch near the top of the mountain.
Instead of rolling all the way to the absolute bottom.
Right. So by making it stochastic, you're essentially shaking the map just a little bit. It gives the marble enough jitter to pop out of the fake shallow valleys.
The local minima, I think they call it.
Yep, the local minima. So it can pop out and keep rolling all the way down to the true bottom, which is the global minimum.
It just shakes its way downhill into the absolute truth. I love that. And it doesn't even need to know the destination beforehand.
Not at all. It just follows the topography of the code.
That makes so much sense. But what happens when you introduce another person into the mix? Like, let's say I have my topographical map of reality and you have yours.
Okay.
And we completely disagree on the landscape. How does the system handle consensus without, you know, crashing?
It handles consensus beautifully through another instruction called KOV, or convolution.
Convolution. Yeah.
Right. If we look at the old 1D model, if you are, say, 70% sure of something, and I am 30% sure, our average is 50%.
Right. We just meet in the muddy middle.
Exactly. It completely destroys the nuance of our individual perspectives. It's a lossy average. And neither of us is actually right in the end.
Yeah, that's a terrible way to find the truth.
But with the Command V instruction, the universe doesn't average our perspectives. It actually blends our two semantic landscapes together.
It overlaps them.
Yes, it overlaps our 2D probability matrices. And the mathematical result isn't a single flattened number. It produces a brand new intersection map.
Oh, wow. So the high overlap zones would represent shared truth, I'm guessing.
You got it. And the low overlap zones represent divergent perspective. It maps out exactly how two observers can find a complex common ground mathematically.
Without even having to communicate directly.
Exactly. It's all just math.
Okay. So if truth is this incredibly complex, overlapping topological map that requires constant shaking and blending, we come back to my earlier problem.
Computing power.
Yes, computing power. Where is all this data actually being stored and rendered? If the universe is a computer running these gradient instructions, where is the physical hardware?
This is where we dive into the holographic universe principle. The codex completely redefines what black holes are.
Oh, right. Because we are taught to think of a black hole as a gravitational trap, right?
Yeah.
Just a bottomless pit in space where nothing escapes.
But in Teleplasm M, a black hole is actually the universe's most powerful semantic GPU unit.
A graphics processing unit for reality.
Yes.
So the most destructive force in the cosmos is actually just the universe's graphics card working overtime.
That's one way to look at it. It is literally the only object dense enough to handle the computational load. The event horizon, you know, the supposed point of no return, is not a physical sphere of destruction.
And what is it?
It is a programmable interface. It's a physical manifestation of an instruction called HRRZ.
Okay, HRRZ as in horizon.
Exactly. When 3D physical matter, which the text calls bulk data, falls into a black hole, it gets compressed by this interface into a 2D mesh tensor on the surface.
Okay, wait. So a black hole is essentially the ultimate ZIP file compressor for the universe.
That's a great analogy.
It's taking all this messy, voluminous 3D reality and just flattening it into pure 2D math. But how does a ZIP file actually work in this context?
What do you mean?
Well, because on my laptop, a ZIP file compresses data by finding repeating patterns, right? Redundancies. Like, it takes 100 identical pixels and just writes 100 blue pixels instead of saving each one individually.
Right. And you've hit on the exact mechanism of advanced semantic encoding. The black hole is doing the cosmic equivalent of that pattern recognition.
Oh, wow.
It looks at the 3D bulk data falling in, finds all the semantic correlations and redundancies in that data, and strips out the physical volume completely.
So it only keeps what actually matters.
Exactly. It encodes the core relational truths directly onto its 2D surface. And what's amazing is that this specific encoding process solves some of the most headache-inducing paradoxes in modern physics.
Ooh, like the firewall paradox. I always get the details on this one slightly tangled.
It's a tricky one.
Is that the one where quantum mechanics and relativity get into like a fistfight at the edge of a black hole?
That is a very fun way to put it, yeah. Relativity says that if you were floating through space and crossed the event horizon of a supermassive black hole, you wouldn't even notice.
Right. It should be a smooth, drama-free ride.
But quantum mechanics argues that because of how particles entangle, the horizon should actually be a blazing wall of high energy radiation, a firewall.
That would just incinerate you instantly.
Exactly. And they obviously can't both be right.
So, how does treating the universe like a semantic GPU actually solve a fight between quantum mechanics and relativity?
Well, Telepasm M solves it by arguing that the firewall isn't a physical wall of fire at all.
What is it then?
It's a computational illusion caused by a gauge mismatch.
Meaning my personal reality code doesn't match the black hole's reality code.
Yeah, think about what happens when you try to open a really modern software file on a 10-year-old operating system.
Oh, it completely crashes. Or it spits out a wall of corrupted, chaotic text.
Exactly. If your local coordinate system as an observer doesn't align with the semantic coordinates of the black hole's boundary, the gradient, that slope of truth we talked about, approaches infinity.
Okay, I'm flowing.
And to a classical observer, an infinite mathematical gradient registers as infinite physical energy, a firewall.
So it's basically a glitch.
Yeah. But the framework introduces an operator called GUE.
Let me guess, the GUG operator is like downloading the right software update so you can actually read the file.
Spot on. It transforms your coordinates to match the horizon. If you apply the GUU operator, the semantic mismatch is completely resolved.
And the firewall goes away.
The infinite gradient drops back down to zero and the wall of fire disappears. You just glide right through.
That is wild. I want everyone listening to just imagine that for a second. You are falling toward a literal black hole about to hit a wall of infinite energy,
Yeah.
and the universe essentially just runs a quick format conversion on your existence, and suddenly it's a smooth ride. That is wildly elegant.
It's beautiful math.
But that leads to an even bigger problem, I think, the information paradox. Because black holes don't stick around forever, do they?
No, they leak Hawking radiation over billions of years and eventually evaporate completely.
Right. So if the black hole vanishes, does the universe's ZIP file get deleted forever?
And that is the billion-dollar question, because if information is destroyed, the fundamental laws of physics break.
Right, which is bad.
Very bad. But the codex handles this beautifully by returning to the Cohen V instruction, that convolution concept we mentioned
The
earlier.
overlapping maps.
Yes. When matter falls in, its state isn't destroyed. It is convolved with the horizon. It's blended into the black hole's 2D mesh.
Okay.
Now, as the black hole slowly leaks Hawking radiation, we look at that radiation from our limited 1D perspective, and it just looks like random thermal noise to us.
We're missing the big picture.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We are only seeing a flattened trace, like a 1D shadow of a deeply complex tensor.
So to us, staring through our telescopes here on Earth, the data pouring out of the black hole just looks like static on an old TV screen.
To the naked eye, yes. But the text states that if you could read the full 2D mesh using something called the inverse semantic Fourier transform, you'd see that the information is perfectly preserved.
Okay, inverse semantic Fourier transform. I'm going to need you to translate that into English. What is that transform actually doing to the static?
Sure. So a normal Fourier transform is basically a mathematical prism.
A prism, like Pink Floyd.
Ha ha! Yes, like the album cover. If you shine white light into a glass prism, it splits the light into all its individual colors. An inverse Fourier transform does the exact opposite.
So it takes all the scattered colors and puts them back into a single white beam.
Exactly. It takes all the scattered, seemingly chaotic frequencies, the static, and reassembles them back into the original signal.
Ah, I see.
The text argues that the static isn't random noise at all. It is deeply encrypted semantic data hidden in the off-diagonal elements of the tensor field.
So you just have to deconvolve it, run it through the mathematical prism in reverse, and you get the original data back. So
Exactly.
the data is never actually lost.
Never. Unitarity is completely preserved.
And for anyone who isn't a quantum physicist, unitarity is essentially the universe's supreme accounting law, right? Like the ledger always has to balance.
That's a perfect summary.
If you burn a book, quantum physics says you should technically be able to reconstruct the entire story from the smoke and ashes, even if it's, practically impossible for a human to do.
Right, the information is still there. The universe never drops a single bit of data. And what's fascinating here is how the epilogue of the codex addresses our place in all of this.
Because we have to fit in somewhere.
Exactly. If black holes are GPUs rendering the semantic encoding of reality, who or what is actually looking at the screen?
Oh.
The framework suggests that we are the rendered output.
Wait, really?
Yeah, the 2D boundary is the only true solid reality. Our 3D lives, our physical bodies, the space between us, we are just the holographic shadows cast by those semantic truth states interacting on the edge of the universe.
Man, it fundamentally flips how we view our own existence. We are the shadows.
We are the shadows.
But it makes me wonder, if our universe is running on this massive, interconnected software, will any computer system, no matter how powerful the GPU is vulnerable to crashing, right?
Oh, definitely.
If I write bad code on my laptop, it freezes. So what happens when the universe's GPU encounters a fatal error? What happens when it tries to compute a paradox?
And this brings us to the real danger zone of the framework, semantic phase transitions. Let's look at the most famous paradox of all time, the Liar's Oscillation.
Okay.
The statement is, this statement is false.
Right. Because if the statement is true, then it's false. But if it's false, then it's actually true. It's an endless loop that just goes nowhere.
Exactly. In a basic 1D scalar system, it's just an infinite flip-flop. Mm. True, false, forever.
Right.
But remember, we are operating in a 2D mesh now. We're on a topographical landscape. In that environment, a paradox doesn't just flip back and forth in place.
What does it do?
The contradiction forces the probability flow to curve in on itself. It creates a vortex. It becomes a mathematical singularity known as a semantic curl.
A semantic curl.
Mm-hmm.
So the truth is literally spinning in a circle, like a hurricane forming on our topographical map.
Yes. The math shows the probability flow endlessly orbiting this semantic singularity. And honestly, one little vortex might not be a big deal for the universe to handle.
Sure, it can just work around it.
But what happens when multiple observers, multiple systems, start generating these paradoxical curls over billions of years?
Oh, they start to add up.
They accumulate. The framework measures this buildup of tension as paradox mass.
Wait, how does a philosophical paradox actually build up enough mass or tension to physically affect the universe? It's just a concept.
Think of the shared semantic vacuum, that mathematical fabric that holds all this together like a sheet of glass,
mm-hmm.
or maybe a supercooled liquid.
Okay, sheet of glass.
It can only maintain its smooth state as long as the truth is flowing relatively freely. But as these paradoxical hurricanes build up, they twist the fabric.
They put stress on it.
Exactly. And when the cumulative paradox mass, the total combined rotational twist of all these errors, exceeds a specific critical threshold.
Yeah.
The manifold simply cannot support the topological strain anymore. The glass shatters.
The system crashes.
It triggers a semantic phase transition. The physical symmetry of reality breaks, the manifold collapses, and the entire holographic dictionary is wiped completely clean back to the base vacuum state.
It's literally the universe getting the ultimate blue screen of death.
Yeah, everything just goes to zero.
All the data, all the history. To an observer inside the system, if they could even survive it, that would look like a complete timeline restart, a vacuum reset.
All previous correlations are instantly erased,
yeah.
and the universal truth table has to reinitialize from scratch. They call it a dictionary bootstrap.
Okay, but here is the glaring issue with that theory.
Go for it.
If paradoxical loops can crash reality, and the universe has been chugging along for nearly 14 billion years, why hasn't the timeline restarted already?
That is a very fair point.
I mean, I guarantee humans have generated enough paradoxes to shatter the glass by now. Why are we still sitting here having this conversation? Because the architect of the system, whatever fundamental force designed this math, built in a failsafe patch.
A patch.
Yeah. The codex outlines a robust stability protocol, which relies on three distinct methods for preventing these vacuum resets. And the most aggressive, most fascinating one is called the Novikov filter. Or the NOV instruction.
The Novikov filter.
The NOV filter is a real-time, non-linear projection filter. Its entire purpose for existing is to hunt down closed time-like curves.
Closed time-like curves, so like time travel stuff.
Essentially, yes. Grandfather paradoxes, where information or matter loops back in time and contradicts its own origin.
Right. The classic time travel problem.
So whenever the universe's probability flow starts to bend and create one of those paradoxical curls we talked about, the Novikov filter intercepts it.
And what does it do?
It maps it directly to the vacuum state.
It maps it to zero. Okay, think about how often you type a chaotic, misspelled text message and your phone's autocorrect just jumps in and swaps it for a real word.
Yeah, all the time.
The Novikov filter is like a cosmic, highly aggressive autocorrect. You attempt to create a paradox, and the universe just deletes your typo before you can even hit send.
It's even more profound than autocorrect, though, because autocorrect reacts to an error. The Novikov filter prevents the error from ever manifesting.
Wait, how can it prevent it before it happens?
It doesn't physically stop the paradox from happening like a brick wall blocking a speeding car. It simply erases the mathematical probability of the road existing in the first place.
Oh, wow.
The universe doesn't have to fight the contradiction. The contradiction just becomes mathematically impossible to render.
So what does this all mean for us? Doesn't this imply a deeply deterministic universe?
How so?
Well, if our errors are actively being filtered out by the vacuum itself, are we just living in a highly censored reality just so the computer doesn't crash? Like, where is the free will if the universe is quietly deleting paths it doesn't like?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, it's not actually about censorship. It's about causal self-consistency.
Causal self-consistency.
Right. The filter only targets the vortex, those physics-breaking loops. The rest of the mesh, the beautiful nuances, the divergence, the overlapping consensuses between different observers.
All the regular human stuff.
Exactly. Those are all completely allowed to exist and evolve freely. The universe is simply self-regulating its own causal logic to ensure the game can keep being played.
Okay. That makes me feel a bit better. And the text mentions a couple of other ways it stabilizes the timeline, right? Because relying entirely on a cosmic autocorrect seems a little risky.
It does. So the second stabilization method is semantic anchoring. Remember the HORZ instruction we discussed with black holes?
Yeah, the event horizon compression.
Well, the system takes a core set of immutable fundamental truths in the dictionary and locks them as event horizons. These become regions of infinite density in the probability mesh.
Like anchors.
Exactly. They act as heavy anchors or pillars that hold the timeline's geometry firmly in place so that a stray paradox can't easily twist the entire fabric.
It's like nailing the corners of a massive carpet to the floorboard so it doesn't bunch up when a dog runs across it.
Spot on. And then the third method is distributed syncing.
Distributed syncing. How does that one work?
Well, imagine if every observer in the universe tried to collapse a massive truth state, like measuring a really complex quantum system at the exact same microsecond.
It would probably cause a huge lag.
It would create a semantic shockwave that could completely overwhelm the GPU. So instead of a global sync, the system uses asynchronous phase locking. It staggers the updates. It spreads the entropy collapse across the network over time so the manifold can absorb the computational change gradually.
So it staggers the download so the server doesn't crash from too much traffic?
Pretty much.
Man, this entire framework is just staggering to think about. I mean, it takes everything we assume is solid and permanent about reality and turns it into this fluid, programmable topology.
It's a complete reimagining of physics.
It really is. We've journeyed from thinking of truth as a simple binary, a 1D scalar point, to realizing it might be this nuanced 2D mesh of valleys and peaks that we actually have to navigate.
Right, using those G-rate instructions.
Exactly. And we've looked at black holes not as cosmic vacuum cleaners, but as semantic GPUs compressing 3D data to 2D math, solving paradoxes with coordinate alignments.
The gauge mismatch.
Yeah. And we've seen how the universe actively protects its own timeline, automatically filtering out paradoxical curls and staggering its processing power to avoid a catastrophic symmetry-breaking event.
It really does frame the cosmos not as a cold machine full of dead gears, but as an active, living language that is constantly calculating its own consistency.
And I think there is the deeply human takeaway here, too.
Oh, for sure.
I want everyone listening to think back to that Kikome V instruction, the convolution of two different maps. It reminds us that finding common ground with someone else isn't about compromising your beliefs down to a single flattened 1D point of truth.
No, it's not.
It's not about just meeting at a muddy 50%. It's about bringing your complex, messy map of reality, laying it over someone else's map, and finding those shared topological zones.
Those intersecting basins of attraction. It suggests that consensus is an act of discovery, not an act of reduction.
That's beautifully said. But this raises an incredibly important question, I think. If reality truly operates on this hidden semantic level, how much of our own perception is already tuned into the code without us even realizing it?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it?
Which brings me to a final thought I want to leave you all with today. We mentioned earlier that distance might just be an illusion caused by a lack of semantic correlation, and that systems can slide down gradients of truth without actually knowing the final destination.
Right, the stochastic descent.
Could human intuition be exactly that? Think about those inexplicable gut feelings you get when you just instantly know the answer to a complex problem. Or you sense someone's intentions without knowing how you got there.
Just reading the room, essentially.
Yeah. Could that spark of intuition actually be our own brains, unconsciously running the G-rate instruction on the universe's background mesh?
Oh, wow.
Are we physically feeling the slope of the semantic vacuum and pulling the truth right out of the dictionary before our conscious minds can even process the math?
That is a fascinating idea.
It is something to think about the next time you have a sudden stroke of insight. Maybe you aren't just guessing. Maybe you're reading the code. Keep questioning your coordinates in the holographic dictionary and keep sliding toward the truth. We will catch you on the next deep dive.